Yes, and hello to Arsenal Gothenburg podcast, a podcast for Arsenal fans, by Arsenal fans, to Arsenal fans, where the emotions run the show. My name is Philip Tolf, and with me, as always, I guess, Oscar Axelsson. Hello, Oscar. How are you?
Hello, Philip. Well, I'm good. Back in Sweden again, after being in London.
How was it in London?
Very good. Except Arsenal, right. Everything was good.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to come to that. Do you have something else to recommend which you did in London, except Arsenal?
Well, I did go to the Clash exhibition, and it's now 40 years since they released London Calling album. And so they have an exhibition who's due to 15th of April, I think. That was very interesting.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous for you there.
And you also have the Arsenal connection, because they had a segment of it was about Arsenal and a scarf with "There's only one Liam Brady," and speaking about there were things about the FA Cup final in 1979. So you can combine both good times of Arsenal and good music.
Great, great. Before leaving the subject, Oscar, which one is your favorite The Clash song?
That's a good question. Well, yeah. I mean, London Calling is always going to be special, but
yeah, that's a classic.
There's a lot of songs. Pull Is on My Back, I like. Yeah.
All right. Everyone who used to listen to the pod, we used to do this in Swedish, but this episode is in English. That's because we have an English guest with us. I'm going to say hello and welcome to Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, guys. It's a pleasure to be here on the show.
It's great to have you on the show. Andrew, you are famous for Arsblog. You write for Arsblog. You do Arscast sometimes. And you have your own podcast, which is called Left Field, which I highly recommend. How do you have time for all this?
Oh, God, you know what? Some days I realize that I probably don't, because I actually have a full-on day job as well. But you know what? Arsenal's a passion, and you kind of find a way. I kind of fell into the writing about football and sports stuff. And then a few years ago, about 8 years ago now, which is crazy, Andrew from Arsblog kind of got in touch, because we'd been communicating behind the scenes, and he suggested starting up Arsblog News. And you know, I'd been reading that site since I was, at university, so around about 2002 or something, and I was such a massive fan. It was such a huge honor. I couldn't really turn it down, and it's just been great. So, you find a way, basically, when you're passionate about something.
Yeah, isn't it like that? Since we, have our own podcast, we kind of know what you're talking about. But isn't it like that, when you're passionate about something, you kind of give it time. Because you're so interested, and all you want to do is talk about Arsenal, basically.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, I mean, I'd be reading about Arsenal anyway if I wasn't writing about it. And I very briefly had a stint as a sports journalist, and it was through that I got into chatting with Andrew. But I could see that sports journalism as a whole was kind of going down a very clickbaity avenue. And I think Andrew could see that as well. And it was a kind of sort of meeting of minds, I guess, to a certain extent, because what Andrew wanted to make sure was not happening when he set up an Arsenal news site was that we would be kind of lowest common denominator stuff that, would just lure people in for the hits. Mm. As football fans, that you go and read articles all over the web, but we wanted to create something that sort of was relatively trustworthy. I mean, it's very difficult, obviously, with football journalism, because so much of it's unknown. You don't really have an idea of what's going on behind the scenes, but you at least try and be as honest as you can, and put your hands up when you don't know something for sure, and kind of play it with a bit of a light touch. And it's been a pleasure being part of such a big project, and a project for Andrew is sort of gained him international recognition, I guess.
Yeah, true. I have to say I'm a really huge admirer of your work. So keep doing it. Keep doing it.
I'm sure we will. Yeah, thank you.
For those who don't know you, Andrew, it's time to get to know you because, you know, we start every podcast with a new guest. We have our introduction questions. So the listeners and maybe me and Oscar as well get to know you better as an Arsenal fan. Just a simple Arsenal-related questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. First question is the best question. What is your name?
My name is Andrew Allen.
Perfect. We got that right.
You did indeed. Yeah.
Great. Do you get a next question, Oscar?
I don't have the question in front of me, so I don't know if it's going to be in the right order. So, but when?
Fire away.
When, how, and why did you become an Arsenal fan, Andrew?
So I was, I mean, my dad's been a season ticket holder for about 40 years. My grandfather and my uncle on my mum's side were both Arsenal fans. I guess I was born into it. You know, one of my first memories as a kid is kind of wearing an Arsenal shirt. I didn't really have much choice. And, I still sit next to my mum and my dad now. We have season tickets in a row in the Emirates, and my brother's a big Arsenal fan as well, but he moved to Australia a few years ago, so he used to also sit with us. Yeah, it's kind of a family affair. It always has been. I guess it always will be. It's one of those things. I mean, it's been fun. It's had its ups and downs, obviously, but it kind of binds us together.
Which one of you are the most, you know, what's the word, feistiest? in the stance, so to speak.
I mean my mum's very, very small. My dad's quite a quiet person. Look, I could tell you a funny story. I mean, yeah? There's been several times when I've been in the stadium and, you know, when I get a bit angry about the way the team's playing, and let's go back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago or something, and, you know, things weren't going so well under the Wenger regime, and I was sort of frustrated watching the matches. But there was a kind of like a young kid and his dad in the row in front. And I remember I was swearing a bit and my mum kind of tapped me on the shoulder and very loudly kind of told me off for swearing. And I was kind of looking around and I was like, for God's sake, like I'm a 35-year-old man being told off by my mum for swearing at the Emirates Stadium. But it's fine because the kid in front, he didn't seem to care because his dad was hurling abuse at the players as well.
All right. I guess it's a funny, you know, atmosphere in the stands. Depends where you see it. I went to a game or two games actually this April with my girlfriend, and she has never been to a football game before. And she was like, you know, we sat in the North Bank and they were cursing, you know, fuck you referee and everyone, you fuck you. She was like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, you're a brave man. I can't bring myself to bring my girlfriend to the game because I think she'll probably disown me. There's like a version of me that kind of occurs for 90 minutes on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And I kind of like to keep that like within the sort of stadium walls, and then I can come home and be a normal person. Yeah. I'm not sure she'd like the version of me at a football match, but that's, you know, sometimes it's just a bit of an outlet. I mean, this is not to, you know, paint myself as some kind of like swearing, abusive lager-lout all the time. I mean, I'm very supportive of the team. It's just, you know, occasionally when a ref makes a bad decision or something, you just, it's very emotional.
Yeah, it's instinctive. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah, it is. I mean, and actually, you know what? You know, when the Xhaka incident happened a few weeks ago, I mean, I didn't boo or anything like that. I hate that kind of like turning on your own players, but I can kind of see why it happened. It was a kind of guttural, instinctive reaction. It was, people don't sometimes think when they're in football stadiums. They've had a few drinks. It all just sort of, everything's a bit hazy and you're just reacting in the moment, and you're egged on, I guess, sometimes by the people around you and the general atmosphere. And if the team isn't playing well, then you get a bit frustrated as well. It's all just very tense. You know, it's a level of nervousness that in your day-to-day life, you just don't really kind of come across. And I think it makes people kind of go a bit mad.
Has the atmosphere in the stands changed during the years? You said you had your season ticket for how long?
Oh, so I mean, I got a season ticket when we moved to the new stadium, but
All
I've
right.
been going to games since I was 4 years old. So
Okay.
I mean, the first season I really remember very well was kind of 1990, 91 when Anders Limpar was playing for Arsenal. And it was the year we won the league under George Graham, and we played really good football and we had a great kit, and just, there was a lot of things going on. But I mean, as a kid, you don't really understand all of the nuances of what's going on when you're in a football ground. I mean, for a start, Highbury was still terraced, so I would go and I would sit on what was called a crush barrier. My dad would kind of hold me up, and it was basically standing,
All right.
which when you're only 7 years old is difficult to see. I mean, you'd turn up, but it was, watching the game like I do now from the North Bank Upper in the Emirates, completely different experience, right? It's like
Yeah,
being
of
at the
course.
theatre now. Has the atmosphere changed? I mean, the Highbury atmosphere could be quiet as well. I mean, I think everybody knows it was called Highbury Library at times. But I guess partly because seats were very hard to come by, a 38,000 seat stadium, a couple of thousand of those were for visiting fans. It felt like maybe there was always a kind of hardcore there, whereas now I guess over the course of the last 10, 12 years or so, there's a bit more of a kind of transient element on a match day. So there are always the 38,000 season ticket holders, but then there were also other people who, for want of a better word, are football tourists. And I think that's fantastic because I've done exactly the same thing, going around the world watching matches and stuff. It's great to be part of that, but it does make for a slightly different atmosphere. And I think you can't get away from the fact that when the football's not great, people don't react in the same way. And I think people feel a little bit disaffected and disassociated with their relationship with the club at the moment. And I think Liverpool went through something like that for a long time. They had some American owners for a while before John Henry. And I felt like, Liverpool kind of lost their kind of, the crowd lost what it was to be part of a Liverpool crowd, as it were. And I feel like we're maybe in a bit of that situation at the moment. The good thing is I feel like it can come back. Just because it's died off a little bit doesn't mean that it has to die forever. And I would also say, not to put, I don't want to put anybody off coming to the Emirates. I think people should come and experience the Emirates, because on a good day, and there were good days even last season, when we beat
Yeah, of
Spurs,
course. Yeah.
that atmosphere is unbelievable. Like it's like nothing that you really can find in day-to-day life. And I think that's why people go, because they know that sometimes you're going to be attracted to the moments. Like there are going to be days that are really good, and those are the ones that stay with you.
That's why I do, basically, because the good days are so much better than the worst days. You know what I mean? You do it for the good days.
Course. I mean, even over the last 10 years or something, like if someone said, "What were the great days as an Arsenal fan for you?" I'd say straight away, Hull FA Cup final. And the semi-final before that, the FA Cup final against Chelsea, a few of the derby wins. I mean, those, you cling to the moments because those are the ones that just in your mind will stick with you forever. And that's fine. I think that's why you do it. And we're lucky as Arsenal fans, because actually, by and large, the good moments do outweigh the bad. I mean, we're a club that actually wins trophies. We're known around the world as a successful club, even if that hasn't been the case recently. So I think we do have to kind of cherish the fact that we're lucky and we have good history and pedigree. The key thing is just to hopefully revive that. It's not there at the moment. We'll get to that, I'm sure. But it can come back.
Hopefully, hopefully. Oscar, did you have a question, a
No,
follow-up question?
maybe not a follow-up question, but I just wanted to add to this great discussion that I actually took the friend that I went to London with. He's not a football supporter, and we managed to get an extra ticket through a friend that I met, which also I've been hanging out with them on FA Cup finals and never talked to them more than maybe when I'm in London. Always good fun to catch up with them. And he managed to have a spare ticket, which I took. And then I sent my friend going with where I was about to sit with Eric from New York. And So he didn't like football, and we were joking about the fact because both me and Eric, the friend from New York, we were kind of excited for the game and everything before that, and we took him to the pubs and showed him around, and we were joking about that. Don't get too excited now, Ted. Don't get too excited. But this is what it's like. Don't get too excited. But anyways, so he then got to his first football match, and even he could say, well, it wasn't a good game. But he did admit to the fact that it was kind of a good experience to have gone to a football match, even though he has none whatsoever interest in football. He also said, which not by the influence of us, that the referee was shit. And he
That's
couldn't
something you
believe.
pick up really quick.
Yeah, and he couldn't believe the time wasting that Southampton
Yeah.
was doing. I've never seen anything like it, to be honest. I don't want to excuse anything, but it was kind of remarkable how much of a time wasting Southampton was doing. And I also had to ask him, did you learn any new curse words in the stadium? And he admitted he might have snapped up one or two new curse words.
Well, look, I mean, going to a football stadium and learning curse words is basically like a childhood rite of passage, I think, in England. As for the time wasting, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to the match in detail, but
Yeah.
it sounded like it was dreadful. Like, I mean, it sounded like Southampton at every opportunity wanted to. I mean, I watched a replay and you could hear the crowd howling. On the replays. And yeah, it sounded very tetchy. I mean, the crowd is like that when nobody likes a time-wasting team. It's horrible.
Yeah, the time wasting was ridiculous. But listen, now we start to talk about Southampton game. We're gonna get there eventually, but I think we're gonna finished this question. We'll try to do it a bit quick so we can talk about the game. Andrew, your favorite player now and then, with then I mean throughout the years. So your favorite Arsenal player throughout the years and in current squad.
So I've got to say, I mean, Ian Wright was like a childhood favorite, and I would also say, you know, how can you turn away from Dennis Bergkamp? He was a brilliant player.
Perfect, perfect answer. Everyone who says Dennis Bergkamp usually get a knuckle from me, but since we're not in the same room, you get a, what do you say?
A fist bump.
A fist bump, an
Yeah.
imagination fist bump for
I've
saying
got it.
Dennis
I've got
Bergkamp.
it. Nice.
Great. In the current squad, then.
In the current squad, I mean, I've always loved watching Mesut Ozil when Mesut Ozil was playing well. And I have to say, I really appreciate Alex Lacazette's kind of fight. I
Yeah.
think he was a very deserving winner last year of the Player of the Year award.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex Lacazette is, I think, the player. Oscar, help me out here. Is the player that most of our guests tend to say? I think, Lacazette. I don't know what it is, but he seems to get it at Arsenal, and
Yeah.
you know, the fans seems to get him in a kind of way.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, I
Yeah.
think, you know, his only previous club to this was Lyon, and you know, he was so ingrained in their culture. I think it's the only thing he knows is to basically just throw yourself into the deep end and just sort of let it wash over you. But he gets it. He
Yeah,
does.
exactly. Oscar, do you get the next question? Questions?
Yeah, first of all, you're absolutely right. That's usually who people tend to go for.
In the current squad, like I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have a segment which is in Swedish it's called Rice and Rose, and if you translate it to English you could say get in or bollocks. So pretty much the best thing about Arsenal and the worst thing about Arsenal, and that can be anything, current squad, this being an Arsenal supporter, whatever, you choose. So what's the best thing and the worst thing about Arsenal?
I think maybe the worst thing is the high expectations we have of the team, because it sometimes clouds the ability to just enjoy football in the moment for what it is. So obviously, many of the fans, particularly people under the age of 30, 35, have grown up with, you know, a very successful team. And when you set the benchmark so high, you spend the rest of your life comparing, you know, the status quo to those amazing achievements. That's difficult. It, you know, it makes life difficult. The best thing, honestly, the best thing about being a fan is actually just the friends that you make along the way. You know, some of those great football moments are accompanied by great days out with friends. And I've met a lot of people who I didn't know prior to being an Arsenal fan. I've met them through football, and like sharing FA Cup finals with people, the build up to the game, the excitement, even today, you know, the WhatsApp chats and what have you. Like, just being a football fan in general is a great thing. It's funny because I think people who aren't football fans just look at it and they just think, oh, it's just a bunch of people kicking a ball around a pitch. But for a supporter, it goes so far beyond that. You're buying into a whole community. And, you know, some people in that community you don't agree with, but there are lots of very like-minded people. And I think it kind of broadens your horizons to a certain extent. So I think that's the best thing.
It's a really spot on answer. I think I would say the same thing, basically. And funny thing about supporters, like you said, it's if someone asks, what's the thing about supporters? You kind of have to answer, well, if you don't get it, I can't describe it for you. It's hard to, you know, pinpoint at what's the thing. We usually have one last question, but I know, Oscar, you have a special question for Andrew, something you are specifically interested in. You want to go for that?
Yeah. You touched a bit on it in the early parts of the podcast, but I really wanted to ask you how you came into sports journalism and what's your background in it? Because, well, I did listen to, I came up with the question after listening to you and Andrew speaking on the Arscast Patreon about...
Yes.
So, but I thought that I would like to ask you, how did you start writing? And since I've managed to figure out you have another work, as you said, another daily work.
Yeah. It's a slightly different route. So I came out of university and my university degree was I had a master's degree in Russian art, which is like completely useless.
Say what again?
Exactly. So I initially I started working in like museums and galleries in London, and you know, I realized quite quickly that it probably wasn't the type of work that I wanted to do. And a friend of mine was working for a sports website, which was called sport.co.uk. And I sort of messaged him on Facebook, I think it was. I hadn't seen him in years. I knew he was an Arsenal fan. And I just said, look, if you need a hand, just let me know. And about 5 minutes later, he got back to me and he said, look, I need a preview of the French Open tennis. Any chance you can write me 500 words or something? I hadn't written in years. And I sort of did it, and I saw this suddenly published, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. This is great. And I kind of there and then almost decided that that was something worth following up. So after a while, I managed to, you know, I got out of my current job, worked as an intern at this sports website, got a job, did about 3.5 years work. And we had some contacts inside Arsenal. And we kind of ran a few stories, and one of the stories in particular was we had a contact who basically told us that Kroenke was going to buy the club, and nobody else had this. It was crazy. We were basically sitting on this exclusive story, and we didn't really know what to do with it because the contact was so kind of close to us that if we ran it, it would expose who the person was, and they didn't really want that. But we knew it was coming, and we were ready, and we were prepped, and and told a few people, one of whom I think was Andrew, who runs Arsblog. Yeah. Anyway, we continued kind of doing this type of stuff. And when I got made redundant, our site kind of collapsed. The owners kind of decided to sell it. And Andrew came to me and my colleague, Nigel, and just said, look, I'm thinking about doing this Arsenal website. It's Arsenal News website. Would you be interested? I can't really pay you anything other than maybe like a €100 retainer for a month or something. We both said, oh, yeah, of course, absolutely. And Nigel, the other guy I was working with, he got another job pretty much straight away. 8.5 years later, though, I'm still doing it. And, you know, it's been great. I mean, when we started doing it, Andrew and I, we didn't really know how it was going to play out. I mean, we knew that we wanted to do some Arsenal stuff. We didn't know how many stories we wanted to do a week or anything like that. But he'd been doing Arsblog for years, and he knew there was a potential appetite for it. And actually, I think, you know, on a day-to-day basis, the number of people who came to the site was, I think it really helped expand, like, the Arsblog world. And I've loved it. I've loved every minute of it. It's been a real pleasure. there's an awesome Ask Blog community, a huge community, and the people who get involved with the site often, you see people like Tim Stillman, but there's other people who are less known, like George, who does the kind of youth team football stuff, and loads and loads of other contributors. And it's, you know, they're incredibly talented people, like people who love Arsenal, are obviously very talented, have other jobs as well, but the passion of like Arsenal drives them to keep delivering on this stuff. And it's great. I really love it. And you know, it's I don't see myself ever really stopping. As long as Andrew will have me, I'll be there.
Seems great. Like I said before, you're doing a great job. Keep doing it.
Oh, thanks, man.
The last question for you before we talk about the Southampton game, I guess. Are you a member of Arsenal Gothenburg?
Soon to be.
Great. Right answer straight away. Perfect. I'll send you the details after the podcast, I guess.
I look forward to it. Is there a membership pack?
You can have a few pins and a coffee mug.
Perfect.
I said that on recording. Yeah, so now I'm stuck with it. Great. I'll sort it out for you, no problem.
I'll swap you an Ask Blog mug for an Arsenal Gothenburg mug.
So I feel like the big winner here.
I don't have an Ask Blog mug, so I'm going to have to ask Andrew for one now. So we'll see. We'll see.
All right. We'll see about that. All right. Great. But soon to be. Perfect. Perfect. Now that we know you inside out, it feels like it's time to talk about the football game we played against Southampton. And here's what I think. I think we should do it like this. Since this is a football podcast, an Arsenal podcast, we should talk a little bit about the football, you know what I mean? When I say football, there wasn't much about football, but I think after we talk about the game, I think the discussion are gonna lead to, you know, Emery, the board, Rose and Ihe, and you know, the bigger picture. But start with the game. We do it like we used to do, Oscar, with a lineup.
Sure, or if you want any more things about London.
I think we start with the lineup and then see how it goes. Andrew, when you saw the lineup, what was your thought? Five at the back.
Well, I think, straight away, it's five at the back at home against a team that were 19th in the league. I mean, that kind of sets the tone for things, right? As I said to you before we came on air, I had to go to a family wedding in Ireland. So for once, I wasn't actually at the stadium. But, you know, my dad and I were following the game straight away from on our phones and stuff. And I've watched it since. But straight away, question comes in at 2 o'clock, like, what's the team? And you're looking at it and you're thinking, all right, it's five at the back. But at the same time, you know, it's five at the back, but it's got Ozil, it's got Aubameyang, it's got Lacazette. You've got Bellerin and Tierney who are able to kind of push forward. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of the fact that it was three at the back and then, you know, a couple of wing backs, but I still felt like, you know, come on, guys, we can win with this team. Obviously, it was a bit of a struggle from the off. I mean, Southampton were very, very quick out of the traps. And it's something that Emery had alluded to in his press conference. It's something that Hasenhüttl had said in his press conference that he wanted his team to make a quick start. So I don't know why we were so surprised when they did that.
Speaking of quick start, Southampton made 1-0 after 8 minutes. Oscar, you were at the game in London. What was the reactions?
Stadium? Okay, so I was sitting in pretty much almost by the corner flag, but on the east stand, and so I had a good view of it, and we were kind of surprised about how quickly Southampton took the free kick, because everyone was thinking, was that allowed? Is it going to be disallowed? We're really shocked about, because it's rare that you see a free kick taken that quickly. So pretty much you were like, what just happened?
And I mean, it's definitely interesting, because I mean, I watched the replay and you can see the ball is actually moving. So in a technicality, like if they really, really wanted to kind of pull up, they could have said they took the free kick from the wrong place. The ball was moving. But ultimately, what's so obvious is that Arsenal completely switched off as a defence.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, we were punished for the unforgivable, right? You just can't turn your back on play, which is what we did.
And that's the thing. That's the thing. We turn off. It has been 8 minutes, and you're already turning off in defence. I don't know what to say, really. I'm so pissed of everything. And maybe we should start Emery discussion now, because we're watching it, me and my mates at the pub, and you know all. Some of them were saying, well, it's not Emery's fault that they're turning the backs on the ball. It's not Emery out there playing. Mm. But I kind of feel anyway that it goes back to him.
It does a bit. And I'll tell you what, like, I mean, there's a lot of podcasts out there, but I listened to the brand new one by The Athletic with Amy Lawrence and James McNicholas Gunnerblog, and they were talking to Lee Dixon yesterday. And Lee Dixon... Yeah. Basically did a 20-minute breakdown of where it went wrong for Arsenal and where it's going wrong for Arsenal in defence. And I'd advise everybody to listen to it, because it's actually incredibly fascinating. What he points out is the fact that that first goal wasn't so much a case of like Chambers turning his back. It was actually to do with the way the entire defence was set up prior to that moment. And apparently it involved David Luiz kind of allowing Danny Ings to kind of run off him behind him. And there was a sense of like complete disorganization in the first place. Luiz, after allowing Ings in the build-up to the free kick to run off him, turns around to basically look at Tierney and Socrates and ask, you know, were you guys up with me? Would he have been offside? Blah, blah, blah. He's basically having a conversation about a hypothetical situation that didn't play out, but he was distracted. And Dixon really very clearly makes the point that the players are just not well drilled. They don't understand the need for restricting access and being tight together on the pitch and working as a unit. They seem to all operate as individuals. And that, unfortunately, it just comes down to training, because, you know, Dixon obviously part of a very, very influential and well-known back four, five, what have you, repeatedly tells you that every day on training, it was very, very boring for them, but they were drilled into submission by George Graham. So they knew exactly where they had to stand on the pitch. They knew exactly where their teammates were. They knew exactly how to react to any given situation. And this Arsenal team just doesn't really have that. I guess maybe in the tail end of the Arsene Wenger years, you know, that wasn't really the case. And I think it's just kind of continued to kind of go like that. And I don't know whether it's a case of you don't want to make training sessions boring for these multimillionaire players anymore because they'll go elsewhere. But it feels to me like they're just not, they just don't really get it. And it's frustrating because it buck stops with the manager, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. So I listened to the same podcast you talk about, and I think the one thing Lee Dixon says more is like, this is not a unit, this is not a team, Arsenal. It's every single player for himself, every single time. And I think you can see that not just in defense, but in, you know, attacking side as well. They know what to do. They're just doing things for themselves. And and it's not the first time, is it? It's like the 700th time.
Yes, I think that's the frustrating thing. And I mean, look, there's been a couple of graphs that have kind of made their way around social media in the last few, you know, days or what have you, about the shot differential between the last few years and what's happening now with Emery. So the number of shots that we're taking compared to the number of shots that we're conceding. And at the moment, for us to be conceding as many shots as we are, and I'm pretty sure with the Southampton game that it was like 21 efforts on goal from a team that were 19th and have never really won at the Emirates, I think, ever before.
In 34 years in the league.
It's just crazy. So something tells you that from front to back, and it does start with the front players, right, that everything is being left exposed. And I think Emery alludes to it today in his press conference, which is kind of funny, that, you know, he says that teams are coming to the Emirates and they're playing with no fear. But they're playing with no fear because they've been encouraged over the course of the last sort of 3 months or something to have no fear, because Arsenal players don't seem to know what they're doing. Emery seems to be kind of suggesting that it's because you know, the fans aren't really backing us, and therefore they know, you know, opposition teams turn up at the Emirates and know that we're all going to be disgruntled and our players are going to get panicked by it. But actually, we're only reacting to what we see on the pitch, and what we saw on the pitch is what started this whole thing. It's disorganization.
I agree 100%. 100%. So, moving on then. We actually scored a goal in the first half. And speaking about shots, it was our first shot on the goal. I think it was the 20th minute, was it? Like I said, with 1-1. Oscar, what's your view from the stands?
It's an opposite corner by the clock end. The goal. Right? I should remember. Yeah, it was. Anyway, me and the mate that I was going with, Mo, we were talking about that very much in the first half, that we weren't using Kieran Tierney at all. He was having like a whole ocean of space on the left-hand side, and we weren't really using him. And the first time we used him, he crossed the ball well into Aubameyang, who had a shot, who deflected onto, or was blocked, and then ended up, for, like I said, to score it, to put it in the goal. So it was a good goal, good move. Probably tells you a lot that it took so long for Arsenal to manage to have put together a good attack. Shouldn't really take 20 minutes when you're at home against Southampton.
No, not really. Andrew, were you gonna say something?
Well, no, I mean, well, it was our first shot on goal, and it took quite a while. And I mean, it's interesting, like Oscar says about us using Tierney as an outlet. I mean, last season, obviously, we used a lot of Kolasinac, but there's a lot of just avoiding the centre of the pitch. So we kind of, you know, work the ball to the wings and then hope to try and capitalise off a pullback, I guess, or a cross. And that's kind of how this goal played out. You know, it was a decent finish by Lacazette, but there wasn't a huge amount of joy in the stadium from what I could tell off the back of equalising. It was more a case of come on, line, let's get on with it and trying to get another one, but we never really maintained that momentum.
No, I agree. After the goal, it was basically, well, how are we going to fuck this up anymore? Maybe it was just me. To be honest, I really celebrated when the goal went in. But it, just 2-3 minutes after, it was like, well, we're going to fuck this up. I knew it. I have to say, I have a note. I do note during every game. I have a note that said, Özil. I think Özil was really good in the first half. Yeah. Just to have it out there.
I agree. I think actually, Özil, it does make a difference when you have a player who has the vision to move a ball quickly on the pitch. Obviously, I mean, like, you know, he's a great player. He's not, I don't think, necessarily complimented by some of the players that we have around him. I think he really loved playing with like an Olivier Giroud, who I think was actually a very, very cultured player with the ball played into him. You know, Ozil loves to kind of whip a ball into someone and then have someone move it on. We kind of missed that a little bit. But he also, you know, Ozil thrived with having players who were willing to run behind defenders like an Alexis Sanchez or an Aaron Ramsey. Aaron Ramsey, who, you know, is another midfielder who'd come late into the box, and Ozil and him had a pretty good connection. I feel like maybe we're missing that, and Ozil's really only getting in the team at the moment, I guess, because Emery's decided to back down on having a war with him, and the fact that Xhaka's not playing and we've got Ceballos out injured, and that, I mean, in itself is a whole other conversation that it's probably best not to get into right now.
Do you think Mesut Özil looks at, let's say, Aaron Ramsey's Instagram and think, oh, Jesus, that could be me. I'm stuck here with this moron.
Well, I mean, look, he made the decision to stick around and signed a very decent contract. Was it 300 and something thousand pounds a week?
Ridiculous.
I mean, Mesut Ozil loves London. I think he quite likes Arsenal. I think he also knew from the get-go that he was probably going to outlast Unai Emery. I just have this feeling that he looked at this guy and he went, nah, this guy's not going to last. And for whatever reason, Emery decided much the same. You know, he kind of, I think Emery backed himself. He'd done something similar. which, you know, Emery, I don't know, he just causes problems for himself sometimes. I think he was trying to make a point when he came to London by not being cowed by like a big name player. But we need Ozil's creativity.
Yeah.
You can see if you don't play him, we just don't create. And, you know, I think it was a wrong battle for him to pick. But I can also understand not picking Ozil if you're going to play other players in their right positions. But if you think that playing Lucas Torreira as a kind of the higher midfielder, as he attempted to do in a couple of games, is the answer, then it sort of just shows you to be a bit naive, I think.
It's basically to not just shoot yourself in the foot, but rather shoot off your entire leg.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a very good way of putting it.
Sorry. Yeah, Oscar, go on.
Well, but speaking about units, I mean, one thing that struck me, I haven't been to a game at Emirates since September, the Tottenham game. And it's very different how much of a big difference it can be. That's like 2 months ago. Three months ago, the big difference in play now and then. I mean, everyone was upbeat and there was sort of a lot of energy in the team, and the whole stadium was completely different. Well, we've been awful since that, but speaking about units, I mean, it really looks like you can clearly see that Aubameyang, Ozil, and like I said, really doesn't combine as a unit as they should be able to do as well, because I think since we started Dempsey, Aubameyang has been pretty not as involved in the play, whereas I thought in the beginning of the season he was carrying the team, and I think he was thriving with that in some weird ways. But it's so strange that when we have such a good offensive personnel as them, that we can't manage to get more through them. But then again, our whole team is unbalanced. The midfield's unbalanced. We don't get the ball to them quickly enough. We don't move the ball quickly enough. That was something that really struck me as well. How slowly we were moving the balls. Like, that's not the way that Arsenal should play.
I 100% agree. I mean, I think isn't it amazing that, you know, you've got Pepe there, who we signed for all that money in the summer, who on the surface should complement, you know, Lacazette and Aubameyang, a guy who can break at pace, and for whatever reason we just can't make it work with him at the moment. I think that is kind of frightening, especially when you consider that I think Pepe was very much a Unai Emery backed signing, as it were. You know, he was looking for someone who could break at pace and complement this kind of counter-attacking football that I think he wants to try and play, and he's just not able to. That's a big worry. And when you see a player like Pepe's head go down so early, it's really worrying, because the club obviously backed really big time. I mean, that's crazy money for us to go spending, given that we didn't qualify for the Champions League. And when you start to see players like that not clicking with their teammates, when you know that they have the quality, I mean, it doesn't look good on the manager at all.
That's no good at all, no. Speaking of Pepe, he come on in the second half. And I think you could see, speaking about unit, Oscar, now we had Aubameyang, like I said, Ozil and Pepe on the pitch at the same time. I think it was the first time they four played together, was it?
For a longer period of time. They did play together in, was it against Leicester, but only for the last 10 minutes.
All right, so now for a longer period of the time, yeah. But still, it wasn't clicking. And I think you could see, do you remember the chance Pepe had when he basically came through on goal? And he's a player with, you know, base confidence. You know, don't need much confidence, but just some confidence should shoot at the goal, and then you have scored. But he tried to pass it to Ozil, and then his head comes down again. I don't know. This is just one thing I thought about. A player with some confidence don't do that.
Well, as well as how much would it have meant if he would have put that good chance away, though, with his good overhead kick?
Yeah, they hit the crossbar.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a couple of chances, didn't he? I mean, that the attempted pass to Ozil was the type of thing you do when you're just not confident. And then at the same time, like the overhead kick bounced onto the bar was actually a pretty decent effort, to be fair to him. And at that point, from what I could tell, it sounded like we would, you know, if you were a betting man, Arsenal were going to go on and win the game. But somehow we just sort of allowed the momentum to slip again, and space opened up across the pitch, and Southampton started to hit us on the break, and we got more desperate, and players stayed forward instead of coming back, and you know, it all just got a bit confused again. And I think, you know, again, that was that kind of comes down to players playing as individuals and rather than a collective, you know, not just sticking to their positions and their jobs. It all kind of goes a bit haywire and gets lost in the emotion of the moment.
Yeah, and in that period of time when Southampton, you know, came at us on the counter, they won a penalty. Do you have something to say about the penalty? A bit soft, I think. What do you say?
Yeah, a bit soft. I mean, I think it's never great when a defender kind of loses a player. Like, I mean, basically, he ran from behind him. He ran behind Tierney, didn't he? And Tierney sort of stuck out an arm. And these days, the moment you put an arm out onto another opposition player in your own box, you're kind of in trouble. We saw that with David Luiz when Mo Salah went down at Liverpool earlier in the season. I guess the really frustrating thing is that individually we make these mistakes so regularly, and nobody gives away as many penalties as Arsenal. And that's a fact at the moment. I mean, it really is crazy since the beginning of last season how many penalties we've given away.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that you hope Tierney will learn from. I mean, he's, you know, not known for that type of thing, and we obviously bought him as a kind of upgrade on Kolasinac, hopefully. He looked as pissed off as anybody about the fact that it had happened, and even after it went to a check, I wasn't overly surprised when you look back at it that it was given.
But that's the thing, is frustrating, because we put our players in individuals' positions where they can do mistakes.
Yeah, they get desperate. You know,
yeah, exactly. Instead of, you know, protect them together in a collective, you know what I mean? But Leno saved the penalty. Happy days for like 2 seconds.
Yes, yeah. I mean, our record saving penalties isn't great, so that was it was kind of ironic that even when you save one, Ward-Prowse was there to just tap it in again. But there we go.
There we go. And I think this leads us to, not much happened, or maybe, I don't know, I can't really remember, it was a couple of pints. And all I can, you know, with my notes is, Emery is like the plague. But 1 minute, 1 minute after I wrote that, there are 2-2, Alex Lacazette. And I don't know, the goal maybe, do you want to say something about the goal? Because
I mean, it was a good finish. I was looking at my phone and I saw Lacazette had equalized, and I said to my dad, Lacazette's equalized, and we both kind of shrugged our shoulders a little bit, like, you know what does it matter? Because in that situation we had to win that game, and you know that a 96th minute goal to grab a draw is just nowhere good enough. And I think that probably was the reaction that explained his lack of celebration, explain the lack of celebration in the crowd. There have been late equalizers against teams where obviously you go ballistic, but this was 100% not that occasion. I've seen people joking that Lacazette kind of didn't really react because he kind of felt like the goal would in some way extended Emery's chances of sticking around for a few more days.
Yes.
I mean, look, it's... I have a feeling the club were like, they gave him 3 games or 4 games or something, and this was the first game of those 4, and it was the first that obviously turned things even more against him. It makes it even harder for him to come back from that. I don't blame the crowd. I mean, in that situation, it's very difficult. Like, how could you celebrate that goal?
Did you celebrate, Oscar? In the stands?
Well... it was sort of like, yay. But at the same time, you're in the stadium. You have 7 minutes of added time. And you don't really have a watch to look at. And didn't really know if it was in the 93rd minute or 95th minute, or it's hard, or I didn't keep because I was probably too devastated by that time. And so now I wouldn't say I shared as much.
No, that's the funny thing. You wouldn't, because I agree with you, Andrew. When we saw the goal at the pub, we was like, "Well, fuck it, it doesn't matter anyways." You can,
You've got a clock in front of you, right? So you could see that there was no time to score a winner.
yeah,
Like, that
exactly.
makes a huge difference. It's funny, when I go to the matches, I sit next to my dad, and he, as soon as the board goes up, he starts a little stopwatch on his iPhone. So however long is left, because you never get to see it in the stadium because they just stop the clock at 90 minutes, I always know. So if you get a goal with, another 4 or 5 minutes afterwards, you think there's another chance. You're like, come on, let's go and get another one. But you know, when there's 96 minutes on the clock of 97 minutes injury time, by the time the celebration inverted commas is done and they get the ball back to the center circle, it's just everyone's a bit deflated.
And I hate that Arsenal's done this to me, that I can't even, celebrate a goal anymore.
I mean, look, it's the worst thing, right? It's the one thing you go to matches for, is to have those moments, as I said before. And the moment those goals don't even become something worth sort of partaking in, it becomes a bit of a problem.
Yeah, because the worst thing is apathy, right? I think. And
Yes.
I'm sorry, but I had to say, I start to feel that right now with Arsenal. It's like, I don't even care. It's so boring. I don't care anymore. Obviously, I do care, but I start to feel that. Why should I care about this? It ain't given me anything back. It haven't given me anything back for a long time now. So why should I bother? I'm gonna continue bother, but you get my point.
Of course. I mean, look, the good thing is that it will get better at some point. It might not be tomorrow, it might not be in 6 months, it might not be in a year, but at some point it will get better. And I think we all have to kind of remember that in years to come, we'll kind of point at this moment as a bit of an nadir, and we'll look at it and go, oh, those were terrible days, weren't they? But you and I will have lived through them.
Yeah, and
Oscar
I'm
will be
gonna.
in the stadium that day, and he'll know that that was a bad day. And when the good days come, you'll be able to go, okay, on a graph of bad and good, I know where I am now, and that was bad, and it'll be fine.
Great, yeah, that's great. I'm gonna remember the talk with you, Andrew, and think, well, the shitty times we had at that time, it can't be any worse than that.
Of course.
Great. So, before moving on, because I think this, with not much else to say about this game. We're gonna wrap it up with a segment called Player of the Season, where you, Andrew, as the guest, nominate three best players in Arsenal. I know that's a bit different, difficult. Sorry, difficult for you now, but you have to try your best. The player you thought were third best in Arsenal, give 1 point. Second best, 2 points. And best in Arsenal, give 3 points. And all these points go to table. So in May, we're gonna see which player in Arsenal who has been the best this season. Now it's actually Guendouzi leading the table. But over to you, the third best player in this horrible game.
So I was going to give it to Tierney, but then he gave away the penalty. So I'm actually going to give it to Leno, who
Leno.
had a bit of a, just an average game for him, but he still saved a penalty, which was a novelty. So third place, I'm going to give to Leno.
Fair play. Second place.
Ozil, who I think, as
Also.
you said earlier, like had a good first half, second half. He's, nice touches. Not necessarily his best game in the world, but we didn't have a great team performance, so Ozil too.
True. And the best Arsenal player in this game.
Well, he only had two shots and he scored two goals, so I'm going to give it to Alex Lacazette, who, whether he celebrated or not, you have to sort of say 2 goals is from a striker is what you want, right?
Emery was given, like I said, 3 points as well, and said, "Great, you're saving my job for another week. Great, thank you." So with this game talked about, I think this leads us to a bigger discussion, which is Emery, the board roles, and why he's he left. There's a lot of rumors today, actually. I'm gonna see if I can read this out in proper Portuguese. A lot of rumors today about the manager. Nuno Espírito Santo. I couldn't do it in Portuguese, but you know who I mean.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I I had a little bit of a dig around today to see, because I think everybody knows that there's a link between Jorge Mendes, the super agent, and Nuno Espirito Santo, and they know that there's a link between Wolves and Jorge Mendes, who's placed a lot of players there. It turns out that Nuno Espirito Santo was the first ever player that Jorge Mendes placed as a representative. So he got him a move in 1996. Espirito Santo was a goalkeeper. So there's a very tight relationship between those two. And it turns out that Raul Senlay is a very close friend of Jorge Mendes. So there's a kind of like a lot of joined up stuff going on here, right? I think actually the Mourinho link was also because Mendes was an agent of Mourinho, and, you know, it's the same thing.
Do you think he's going to get fired, Emery, or do you think they're going to wait until the season? Because, you know, just back and back 2 weeks, Rose and he said, well, Emery has our full trust, and the problem is the noise from the crowd.
I think if we lose on Sunday against Norwich, I think that would be game over. You have to understand, I guess, that it takes a while to find a new guy. And if we have no intention of, you know, it takes a while to find a new person. And I think, you know, the negotiations that go with firing someone, the negotiations that go with bringing someone new in take time. And actually, after a while, you probably think, well, there's no point rushing this. There's no point just sacking him tomorrow just for the sake of it and putting a caretaker in, and then there being more uncertainty and upsetting, like, potentially the academy because you have to pull Steve Bould into the first team training sessions and all the rest of it. So I think also there's a level of respect between Emery and Senlay. I think to give him 4 games after the international break and give him like the opportunity to prove himself once more was fine. I kind of got it. But I don't think they're going to give him the whole of the season. No, I think he'll go quite soon if Arsenal continue to lose. If they start winning. If they started winning, they would have to be doing it in a style that gets the fans on board.
Yeah.
And I just don't see that happening because the players just look so confused.
Yeah, there's no way Emery's coming back from this. It's been, I think, written all over him for quite a while now. But you say 4 games in from now. Did you say that?
Well, I think if you include the first game being Southampton,
yeah,
the second game being tomorrow night against Frankfurt, the third game being Norwich. I mean, I suspect that by Norwich, if we lose that, he'll go. But then there is one other game after that, and I can't actually remember off the top of my head who we play. But
it's Brighton at home, the December the 5th.
Right, and Brighton were a team that caused us trouble tail end of last season. You know, I suspect a decision will be made after the Norwich game.
All right, okay. Because what I was thinking about when I said 4 games is like, oh, blah, 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 then it's Brighton home, and then West Ham away.
From when the international break was on. I mean, the problem is that the run we're on at the moment is a run that you would consider relatively easy. It gets a lot harder in the build up to Christmas. So if someone comes in, Jesus, they've got, it's going to be a hard job rescuing the season.
So that's what I was thinking. Like, they give Emery basically till New Year, because it's kind of rough, tough, you know, to set a new manager up against. And the first game is against, you know, at home against City, and then it's away against Everton, and then, but it's a Chelsea somewhere there in between. No, the 29th is Chelsea. But, I don't know. Hope you're right.
I think you need to start building for the future as soon as possible, really. Yeah, and also the Europa League. So it's not all completely lost. We could somehow succeed, you know, in the other tournaments. But, it's the league, and that's the most depressing thing, is the fact that, you know, especially as a season ticket holder, that we're going to be going to the stadium for a good 6-7 months from now, and there might not be much to play for.
You need something you believe in, right?
Of course, yeah. There's nothing more depressing than kind of just sort of turning up on a Saturday in the rain and knowing that you're just sort of playing for 6th or 7th place or something. That's not good.
Not good at all. Have you lost, Andrew, confidence in the backroom staff? I'm talking about Raul Sani, Edu, and, or do you think it's all according to plan?
I mean, I look, whoever came in and replaced Wenger was going to be difficult. I think Sanley and Vinny Venkatesham, the managing director, whatever his title is, yeah, you know, those two didn't expect to be in the roles that they were in when Wenger left. I mean, you have to remember that a year ago, Ivan Gazidis was at the top of the pile, and Sven Mislintat was there, and Sanley had been brought in. So as well as, you know, Wenger going, you suddenly got this new kind of triumvirate at the top of the table. And I don't know, I think the fact that Gazidis left and Sanley kind of brought in a completely different vibe, I think. I mean, he's a connections guy. He's less about what Wenger was about. You know, he's a man who I think has always been a kind of little black book guy, the kind of guy who's got a few very important people written down in his notebook. And Edu's barely been there 5 minutes, so I don't really know what Edu's about. I think it's slightly awkward for him if a guy who used to manage him, who's managing the club, is about to get sacked, and he's probably got to go and tell him that. It's not ideal. I have trust in the fact that, look, there's very good people behind the scenes. Per Mertesacker gets it. He's a great football mind. I don't know enough about Sanley, but I feel like you need a bit of that swagger and a bit of black book contacts to sometimes get transfers over the line. I think we saw that with Nicolas Pepe. So I've got Venkatesham is basically doing commercial stuff, so I don't really have a problem there. Husfarmi, the contracts guy, as far as I understand, pretty good at his job.
He got Pepe to sign, right? So that's a good thing.
No major issues there, right?
Yeah.
Where it gets awkward is obviously, you know, they're going to have to make a decision about the manager. And if they've spent all summer backing him, it's very difficult to sort of turn around on the, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in and go, you know, you're rubbish, mate. Sorry, we've got to go. Because it's complicated. Signing new people, managers in particular, is complicated. We haven't done it that often. They don't have a huge amount of experience in doing it. So I understand them wanting to give him a chance. I think we're all pretty clear that that chance is going to run out relatively soon. The other thing is obviously there's a football executive committee, which is the guys who are doing the day-to-day running of the club at the moment, which is Sanley and Venkatesham and Husfarmi, all the people I've just mentioned. And then the board, which is like the old guys. So Lord Harris of Peckham, Sir Chips Keswick, Ken Fryer, the old boys who kind of sit on an actual board alongside Josh Kroenke and Stan Kroenke. Now, the three old boys, great Arsenal connections, obviously love the club. They don't really have much of a say on a day-to-day basis. It's kind of ceremonial what they do, I think. There were reports recently about wanting to get David O'Leary, ex-Arsenal player, on the board, you know, our record appearance holder. Again, I suspect that was more kind of ceremonial, like it's kind of, it looks good, but I don't expect that he would have that much to say on a day-to-day basis about transfers, football philosophy, all the rest of it. I'm not surprised that they've been sidelined because, you know, now that the ownership issue isn't an issue anymore, we're owned by Stan Kroenke and he owns us 100%, those guys were always going to get sidelined. So all the pressure is on Sanley. He's got a lot on his shoulders. He's been given the responsibility. He's the one who has to come up with the answers.
True. All right. So it's up to you, Raul Sanley. Get some work done. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to have to show us he's got some big balls because I think this is a big decision and a big next appointment.
Yeah, because I think, you know, during the summer, like you said, they invested in Pepe. Everything looks good. There was excitement, like you said, Oscar. Everything was, you know, fresh. Come on, this new start. And if you look at Raul Sanley now, what is it, 4 months after? If you read, there are people like, he's a fucking clown. Get out of our club. You know, I don't agree with that, but I have to say my trust in him has slightly gone down a bit.
I think that's fair to suddenly have doubts about someone that we haven't really got to know is fair enough. I mean, right, we've all been in relationships with people where you kind of, you think the first 3 months and this is the most amazing person in the world. And then after a little bit of time, you're like, oh, I'm not so sure about this person actually. The key thing is, you know, he didn't appoint Emery, right? That not solely. He, alongside Gazidis and Mislintat, made that appointment. The next appointment is going to fall on his plate, and I think you have to kind of judge him a bit more on that.
He don't want to get it wrong, you think?
He can't afford to get it wrong.
Exactly.
You know, it's, at the same time, I mean, I'm sure he's been given some backing by Josh Kroenke, but he can't afford to get it wrong, because Arsenal Football Club's commercial success will depend on our success on the pitch. And there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes in European football about European Super Leagues and expanded World Club, World Cup things and all this type of stuff. You know, if we keep getting it wrong on the pitch in England, we're going to get sidelined from all of those big conversations. And then you're suddenly looking at us being handicapped for 10, 15 years, not 2-3 years. So, yeah, like I said, he's going to have to make the right decision next. And it's a step into the unknown, right? You just don't know with – it's not an exact science appointing a new manager. You just you, to a certain extent, you have to just hope – that they have a connection with the fans and that they have an understanding of what you need to succeed in England. It's difficult. I don't envy them making that decision, but he's got to do it. He's getting paid big bucks.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Speaking of playing in England, I think, like you said, I think we should move on. There's a game tomorrow. We're not playing in England. We are playing in England. We're playing at home, for Christ. Against Frankfurt. Oscar, do you have anything to say about the game?
Well, there's a lot of talks about it hitting the lowest attendance ever at Emirates.
Should be easy getting the tickets.
You put it well, Andrew, I think, about the low attendance or the preferences for getting a low attendance tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's... there's a number of things that are kind of playing into it. I mean, the fact that there's no Frankfurt fans, the fact that the club are very worried about Frankfurt fans getting tickets in the Arsenal end. Arsenal are obviously not playing very well. There's a lot of supporter apathy on that front. There's extra security measures in place to make sure the Frankfurt fans don't get in the stadium. A lot of it makes the whole idea of the game slightly unappealing. But we'll see. I mean, I reckon they'll probably scrape about 30,000 fans. Arsenal only need a draw to get through. I think it's going to be an interesting one, because I think from the first leg, obviously, Frankfurt were quite a good team. I thought 3-0 obviously flattered us. And they've since then beaten Bayern 5-1.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Managed to get Niko Kovac the sack. So who knows if they beat us. Maybe they're like the Undertaker, right? You know, they just sort of stand over people.
Yeah. Any specific player you guys want to see tomorrow play? Martinelli, for instance, Saka.
Isn't Saka injured?
Sorry?
Isn't Saka injured?
Oh, sorry about that. About that.
I think I read that somewhere about him being injured.
All right. Nelson for another example then. Martinelli or Nelson? Any specific?
Oh, Martinelli's been great this season. He's been a revelation. I look at Martinelli and I already start thinking, when are Real Madrid and Barcelona going to buy him off us?
Yes.
He's one of those players who I think, so long as he's functioning within a team that's doing okay and his confidence doesn't get damaged. I mean, everything I see about that kid is superstar. We're very lucky to have him. That's great work by Edu for a start. I think he's actually been like the bright spark of the season so far, really.
Martinelli and the Adidas shirts has been a bright spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's so sad to think that these shirts aren't going to see any kind of like glory.
Yeah,
they definitely deserve a trophy, but we'll see. I mean, there's still a couple of other trophies up for grabs.
That's true. That's true. I don't know. I'm running out of questions about tomorrow's game. Is there something you want to say, Andrew? You're going.
I mean, I messaged my mum earlier and I said, look, I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow. We'll go get some chips before the game. And
I
promise not to swear. I'm in a weird way, I'm kind of looking forward to it, partly because I didn't go on Saturday. So I'm kind of chomping at the bit for my next hit. I'm like a junkie. I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it'll be a weird atmosphere, especially with them not having any fans. Because in the Europa League, even though the football teams that we've been playing haven't always been great. The opposition fans have usually been amazing, very enthusiastic. I think it's going to be quite a weird, it's going to be a weird atmosphere. I hope we can get a win because, you know, I always hope we win.
Yeah,
but
true,
I don't
true.
Think it's going to make any difference really to Emery. I think Sunday's really the game where we go away to Norwich, and I think if we drop points there, I think it'll be game over.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Emery's going to start a strong team tomorrow, or is it just like the game doesn't really matter, all focus on Norwich?
I think he might play a stronger team than he might usually, but I still think it'll be a bit of a mix. I read somewhere today that Emil Smith Rowe is playing for the under-23s or something this evening.
Yes, that's correct.
So, you know, that sounds to me like he's not even going to be in the squad tomorrow. So I suspect there'll be a few bigger names playing tomorrow. You know what? I think in a weird way, the way that Emery has gone about splitting the first team in the league and the team in the Europa League probably hasn't played that well, because sometimes you just need to build momentum, and actually having your best team go out and beat a team 4 or 5 nil actually helps do exactly that. And we haven't done that. We've had two completely different teams who, and don't get me wrong, I mean, we've done well in the Europa League by and large this season. But if you're stuttering in the league, go and get the goals and the points and the fluidity by playing that same team against an easier side. I understand these days there's all sorts of like squad rotation and injury worries and all the rest of it. But, you know, Arsene Wenger quite often would play a very good side across pretty much every competition aside from the League Cup. I don't think there's any problem playing that, you know, good teams in Europe and good teams in the league, but we'll see. I mean, at this point for him, it probably doesn't make that much difference aside from he'll probably pick his favorite players, right? Yeah, say goodbye. Yeah.
Interesting point, by the way. There's something you talked about, Oscar. It would be good, you know, to play with a strong side for a while and, you know, get the confidence running. But maybe you should have thought about that earlier. So something else, Oscar, you want to wrap up? Because I think it's time to wrap this show up.
Well, nothing about... Well, I think you pretty much summed it up about the... About the manager situation, about the games upcoming and the past game. And I was just a bit curious. Today I was thinking about the rumors about if there is anything in the Nuno rumors. I was trying to figure out, would he be a horrible fit for Arsenal? Because Wolverhampton really has another way of playing football than Arsenal. Because they are a counter-attacking team, and that's probably the last thing we want in our next manager, to get a manager who builds his play about in sitting back, which I can't see any manager getting our defense managing to be a team sitting back and then be a counter team. So, Andrew, do you have any thoughts on... Or do you just see it as silly rumors, or have you thought anything about if he would be a good fit at all?
I think that's an interesting point. I mean, whoever comes in is only going to have the tools that we have at the moment at his disposal, at least until January. And I don't really see us doing any big business in January unless we happen to sell Xhaka and have to replace him. I don't know. I think the key thing is right now is to find a manager that the players can believe in, and a manager who can communicate his ideas clearly to the players and that the players want to play for him. And I think, as I said earlier, it's not an exact art. There are a number of candidates who I don't actually know what type of football they might play. I don't know what type of football, let's say, Patrick Vieira would play or Mikel Arteta would play. I have an idea, but I've not seen any evidence of it in that. I don't watch enough French football, and Arteta's never coached a game before. I know that Max Allegri would try and bring some kind of system to Arsenal, a bit more defensive potentially, a bit more Italian. I like the idea of him on paper, but then at the same time, I questioned, like, does he speak English? Is that going to be a problem? Can you turn Arsenal into a Juventus-style team when you've got Luis, Socrates, Mustafi, to choose from in your backline. You know, it's a lot of things are up in the air. I wouldn't be wholly against Nuno Espirito Santo. I mean, I if I was against him, it would be for the fact that his appointment would be kind of because of connections and the George Mendes stuff, and I find all of that a bit dirty. I'm not a massive fan. But you have to say, he got Wolves promoted. He got Wolves into the Europa League in his first season in the Premier League. And this season, despite a bad start and the fact their season started in July, they're now sitting in fifth place. So I feel like he's got some qualities there that show that he can build a team spirit and a collective idea of how he wants to play, which is something you can't really ignore.
True. Speaking about Nuno Espirito Santo, I just Google Translate it. Do you know what it means when you translate it?
I mean, I could have a guess, but I wouldn't know.
Nuno the Holy Spirit.
There you go.
That's not bad. Imagine having a manager called the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
I think that's a positive note to end on. Andrew, thank you very much.
Philip, Oscar, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Talk again soon. You can follow Andrew on Twitter at @AAllensport and read his work at Ars Blog News and listen to Andrew on Arscast some time to time. And once again, your own podcast, Left Field, highly recommend it. Andrew, thanks a million.
Can I just finish up with giving a shout out to the writer that I met this weekend?
Yeah, of course, go for it.
So I bought this book called Clickbait, Life as a Modern Football Fan, which me and Philip are going to donate to the Christmas lottery that we're going to have for child cancer research. And it's written by Darren Berry, a very nice guy. Was nice meeting him. Probably one of the few highlights. Well, it's always fun prior to the game. And it was really nice meeting him at the Pyebury Corner, having a good chat with him before the game on Saturday. So big shout out to him.
Great. And like I said, before we start record, Andrew, when it comes to Gothenburg, all pints on us.
Oh, my pleasure. Guys, great. If you want a copy of Together, the Arsenal book that me and Andrew wrote for the for your lottery, then I'll send one over to you.
That would be brilliant. We would love that.
Thank you very much.
I'll just send me a message with the address and I'll pop it in the post.
Of course. Thanks a million. And Andrew, thanks a million and keep up the good work.
Thanks guys. It's been a pleasure. As soon as you guys put the link out, I'll share it to everyone. But it's I look forward to meeting you in person at some point.
Great. We sorted out. Oscar, thanks a million to you as well.
Thank you, Philip. Speak to you soon.
And thank you for listening. Ooh, to be a gooner.